Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted podcast host. I'm here with Matt Bailey. Give me an introduction to yourself, focusing on your credentials, your experience that's led up to this moment in time.
Thank you, Jeremy. I appreciate it. I started developing websites around 1995, 96. I was working in real estate at that time. And funny enough, I had a journalism background, but what it taught me is that I don't want to do journalism. But it also taught me how to lay out a page. Headline, subheading, bullet points, how to arrange content on a page for quick and easy consumption of information. And taking those design skills, that's how I started building websites, primarily for, you know, electronic version of a printed page, not realizing that the markup that you use to do that is exactly what worked with search engines. Now, it was prior to Google. So, you know, I got into, you know, resubmitting pages all night long to get the rankings in Alta Vista. But once Google came along, it was very quickly, you know, just seeing how those pages that were developed a certain way performed well, and just putting one and one equals two. Hey, we're, you know, here's how the content algorithm works, and then building from there. So then you just start to add different skills. For example, like I said, I was doing real estate, so my interest is in selling these properties that we're putting on the website, and then it's developing how to deal with customers, how to prioritize work. One night I'm sitting there saying, what can I do on the website that will have the biggest impact? And I didn't have an answer. So I had to learn analytics. I started with web trends. And, you know, if anyone has ever dealt with web trends, you set it up and then you let it run for a day. And then you realize if your setup's right or wrong. And then you might have to do it again. It's just, it was one of those trial and error moments. But that's how I learned analytics, and then learning how analytics play into a you know, kind of a B2B lead generation system. From there, it's just adding on additional skills. And, you know, and of course, in the late 90s, early 2000s, all I had to do was tell an ad agency that I knew SEO, and I was hired. It was a quick transition. And, you know, and being able to do that, you know, primarily I'm from the Midwest. And so everywhere you look, it's B2B. B2B industrial, B2B services. And so that's where I learned how to do a lot of this and integrate it with additional marketing, larger campaigns. That's where you start developing the UX UI skills. That's where you start looking at conversion optimization and just building more and more from there. And so it just grew working at a couple of different agencies. At two different agencies, I built the SEO and digital marketing departments. And then, you know, went from one agency to the next agency until finally, you know, you get that sense of, wait, I've done this for two other people. I think I can do this for myself.
Yeah.
So branched out, started my own. Yeah, exactly. That's how I, you know, that's how businesses start. So in 2006, I started SiteLogic. At that time, we were more of a client services. And I didn't want to get into development of websites. This is where, you know, we're going to hit our sweet spot, and it's the marketing of websites, the auditing, marketing, and promotion of those websites. About 2015, 2016, I had also developed another business of teaching and training. So I was working with the Direct Marketing Association. I was working with travel associations and automotive associations, and I was traveling and speaking to their audiences and their businesses about how to do these things. And so I had to make a choice. Do I go the agency route or do I do the training route? Because both were highly demanding of my time. So around 2015, 2016, turned SiteLogic into a training company. And also was working with a company called Market Motive. Out of Market Motive, that developed what is the OMCP, which is the Online Marketing Certified Professional Organization. And they're a third-party certification organization of digital skills. And so heavily involved in defining what are the, you know, what makes an SEO? What does an SEO have to know? What are the competencies of an SEO? And worked with the organization to define those competencies. And then also, how do you test for that? So that's my contribution with the OMCP, and still work with them now today and align all my training materials to those defined competencies there. So then also, you know, I went back to school and got a degree in instructional design to figure out how to take 30 years of digital marketing and how do you teach it according to educational pedagogy. And now I'm actually working on my master's degree in digital marketing so that I can teach undergraduate because our education system is a little tricky when it comes to degrees and qualifications.
I have run into the educational conundrum when it comes to SEO in a couple of phases. You know, I worked with Ross Jones and Michael McDougald, who were interfacing with the universities in Nashville, and they wanted to, you know, have trained professionals come in and speak at their marketing classes. So that led to me kind of auditing, you know, the class and realizing you're kind of 5, maybe 8 years behind where we are right now in SEO. But I'm going to say that in the friendliest way possible, because I'm not actually sure that with SEO, that it is plausible to keep the pedagogy, as you call it, of a university up to date, cutting edge. What are your thoughts on the pace of change and trends versus creating educational materials that are going to be worth the bang for the buck? Because anybody going to university is paying, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to be there. So how do you ensure that what they learn is going to help them once they actually, you know, get their degree?
That is a great, great question. And I've worked with training organizations for years now. LinkedIn, Simply Learn, Udemy, Udacity, you know, you name the training organization, I've worked with them to create training materials. And I'm very upfront with them when they say they want a course on SEO. I tell them the most amount of shelf life you're going to get is probably 18 to 24 months. And if you don't have a plan to update this course within, you know, at that 18 to 24 month period, you're going to have an outdated course. LinkedIn is typically very good about recognizing that. Any courses that I've done for them, it typically, you know, around that 18 month or 24 month period, we're looking at, okay, what needs to be updated, what needs to be revised. There are a lot of SEO educational providers out there that have content that's probably bordering on 10 to 15 years old. And it's out there, it's published, they're still selling it. And you know, I'm not going to name names, but when you're involved in this, that's the danger of it. From a university perspective, from an undergraduate perspective, this is where enabling undergrads to get into some of like the mini graduate courses, where workshops or experts coming in and providing that, here's what's happening in this industry, here's how we do this. The problem is, a lot of it is education itself. You know, for example, I taught an undergraduate class last semester. The textbook was an intro to marketing course. The textbook was only a year and a half old, but there was a whole chapter on how the metaverse is going to change marketing. And so even within, you know, even just not SEO, the textbook itself was already out of date. So then you look at the authors of the book, and they're all PhDs in marketing who have never had a marketing job. You look at their bios, and they have consulted with companies, which tells me you've never dealt with the politics. You know, you can have the skills, but you got to deal with politics. You got to get ideas sold internally. You've got to adapt things, and you've got to play the game that you can do 6 of the 10 things you want because the IT staff doesn't want to do that. So there's, you know, from an SEO perspective, it's not just SEO. It's many, many subjects suffer from, you know, and I say this in the kindest way possible, from academia. And that's just the way academia has been structured. And in academia, they're starting to ask the right questions. So that's where we're at there.
That makes sense. And, you know, as Michael McDougald of Right Thing SEO says, the most expensive thing in SEO is red tape, especially when it comes to the enterprise level. And I've experienced it. You know, I worked with HCA, and it was a relatively small project. I needed to edit 10 pages as a subcontractor for a subcontractor of an agency. I had to take a drug test, go to their campus, use their laptop, get 3 sign-ons, then sit in a room with a security guard to monitor that I didn't run off with their secured laptop to edit 10 pages.
Yep. It's absolutely insane.
I love having somebody on who has been in the game for longer than I have. I started in 2007. And already I've seen, you know, cycle after cycle where this newfangled things comes out and SEO is dead and everybody buys into it. All of the articles talk about it. It was a mobile first results is going to kill it. You know, voice search is going to kill it. You know, we had a huge problem with HCU when it first came out. And now, you know, it seems like we're on the tail end of the boy who cried wolf, the zombie boy who is constantly devoured by the wolf and comes back. I'm curious from your perspective, from 1995 to now, I know that SEO is going to be dead again in 2 years. It'll be a newfangled thing. Something will come out. What are the through lines that have been true then, are true now, and will be true in 10 years when it comes to optimization, when it comes to SEO?
I love that question, Jeremy. That is the question. And I think that when you ask that question, you're naturally defining, again, what has always worked versus tactics. And I call them tactics that come and go, tactics that, you know, and I'm one who advocates that we need to change this from SEO to something else. I have never liked the term SEO, search engine optimization, because what are you truly optimizing? Ideally, you're optimizing for visitors, you're optimizing for their conversion, you are optimizing for their engagement. And so those are the skills and those are the aspects that, to me, have always been there. Now, I absolutely love that question because you are necessarily putting a split into what we define as SEO. In fact, I've never liked the term SEO, because it implies that the only thing you care about is the search engine. I go back to my early experience, which I just talked about. I built websites as if I was creating a newspaper page. The layout, the readability, the content, that's never changed. And so the early days we played around with doorway pages. Some of those things I remember, I won't say arguing, we debated about for many, many years, you know, which tactics are too aggressive, which are the black hat tactics, which I had good friends that did black hat, but part of it is because of the type of clients they had. They dealt mainly with affiliates. They dealt mainly with, you know, in Forex trading or Viagra. My clients weren't like that. My clients were B2B lead generation clients where I couldn't take those risks. And so it was content. It was PR. It was building links with associated businesses. And so those skills are evergreen. when you know the content and when you can work within the site to increase the conversion. I always say that that is the, you know, after learning SEO, if you're not learning conversion optimization, you've lost the game. Because that's where you really maximize what you've done. So to me, those are the things that have never changed. Whereas you can list the tactics, you know, in a book of things that have come and gone. And so when people say SEO is dead, I interpret that as the old tactics are dead, because writing content, engaging content, content that reaches visitors, that answers their questions, that converts them into customers, those are the evergreen skills.
I agree. And there's also a blindness that I always like to point out, what Matt Brooks over at SEO Tarek and I dish about on a regular basis, of what you do with your traffic that arrives on your site is as important as how you got them there to begin with. In handing off the keys to the kingdom and saying, no, social media traffic is coming from this bucket, so the social media manager needs to manage those pages. And no, the paid guys, yeah, they can control this set of pages. And no, SEO can only publish to the blog, and our brand managers, no, they only can manage these pages on the site. No, chuck the whole thing out. Let's go back to 1998 and reestablish ourselves as webmasters. You know, like, let's look at this holistically and say, hey, I am in charge of the site. I am going to optimize all of this traffic, because there are crossover opportunities at every door. Email mm-hmm. Sends can lead to branded mm-hmm. search. Email sends can lead to organic social media activity. Organic social media activity can lead to website traffic, which leads to newsletter conversions, which leads to email traffic, which then needs to still be converted. So if you the problem is that I think that we got too comfortable from 2010 to 2020, when there was so much traffic available through Google, that we could just say, yeah, you know what? I don't need to be cross-disciplined. I don't need to talk to the email guys. I don't want to talk to the PPC guys. I don't need to talk to the social media guys. I can just publish blog posts and get backlinks and get all of the traffic that the CEO is going to be happy about, and claim value from all of those other secondary channels, you know, boosting, you know, yes, you know, ignore the fact that we spent $20,000 on radio and video ads that then drove huge brand traffic. No, that we don't even look at brand traffic. We only care about non-branded traffic. Why? Why was that ever a thing?
Right.
That you're ignoring the singular signal that attaches to the market awareness of your business and industry just because you can't control it by publishing a singular blog post that you can tailor and bring links to. No, that's madness.
Yeah. Yeah. What's interesting too is, and so the OMCP, the organization I talked about earlier, has done a lot of job delineation studies. And it's interesting that SEOs have more of a track towards management and leadership than other disciplines like social media, email, or paid, because they have their fingers in all these different areas. They understand how they work, how they integrate, how to measure them. And so as a result, they are much more adept at moving up into a leadership because they've already been corralling everyone together. And so if you've been taking advantage of those relationships, it actually enhances your upward mobility more than any other responsibility in that digital marketing realm.
I'm curious how your experience has played out, you know, sorting by vertical. Have you found a significant difference? You know, if I'm consulting with, you know, Nexen PowerTrack, they're an e-commerce company, they're selling, you know, a new niche product. If you're looking at e-commerce, does that lend itself to a specific niche set of skills versus B2B and lead generation? Is there bifurcation there that's significant enough, or should every SEO try to be multidisciplinary?
That's one thing I absolutely loved about agency work, is having multiple types of clients because, you know, like I said, early in my years were B2B, lead generation. And so you learn what works. And then all of a sudden, yeah, you get an e-commerce client. And it's nice to have someone who's worked with e-commerce because it does require additional UX, UI skills, requires someone who understands more database work. And so, but, you know, early 2000s, that's just something we had to figure out ourselves. But when you can then show up somewhere and say, yeah, I've worked in B2B lead gen, I've worked in e-commerce, I've worked in publishing, I've worked in different areas like that, you know, I've worked with affiliate, because that's a whole nother realm there that each requires different levels of skills. So that's why I love the agency experience, because so much more. And then, you know, what you do with that is completely up to you. You can consult in different areas. I found that, you know, having that background enabled me to bounce back and forth pretty easily between travel, automotive, which, you know, I would consider are more lead gen. Sometimes it's e-commerce, but also in advertising, brand work, things like that. Really enables you to bounce in between those fairly easily. That was bouncing, which skills, you know, how they translate from B2B to e-commerce. I went ahead and kind of finished off that, that's what's wonderful about an agency. You kind of learn both, especially early 2000s. You were exposed to everything. But then it, you know, you learn from one and apply it to the other. That's really the helpful thing about those.
All right. Well, let's go to the elephant in the room, the thought in every SEO's back of their head, the tiger in the CEO's office that says, AI this, AI that, ChatGPT, you know, we need GEO, we need AI SEO, we don't need to invest in an SEO budget anymore. There were three different Reddit threads that I saw where, you know, SEOs lost their job because the CEO had determined SEO is no longer relevant. And they need to stop doing SEO. Instead, they need to start making content and get articles placed and so that these LLM bots can find these articles and mentions and links. There's an inherent irony to me in that, but I'm curious, what's your take on, obviously we're kind of diagnosing this time what it is that killed SEO, but really what is, you know, it is true that LLMs have been a part of SEO since 2010, 2015. I used Jarvis before they had to rename it. Because of copyright and Iron Man, and it's now Jasper, but we used content spinners. I'm sure you remember those tools in 2005, the 2005 era. So there have always been these things that help you create more content. But what do you see as the bigger impact of these types of tools, both in the hands of SEOs, and on the general marketplace, and on the psyche of those stakeholders who have to approve budgets?
Yeah. First, here's the first point. SEO works. It still works. In fact, SEO works on LLMs. They look at the same things. And honestly, LLMs are like early search engines. It's almost like pre-Google search right now with the LLMs. And what amazes me is how many companies are jumping on the we can track your visibility in LLMs, which blows my mind because even if two people on ChatGPT give the same prompt, they're going to get different answers. So how are you tracking the prompt? How are you tracking how it responds other than, you know, basically we're back to doing rank checking in that kind of scenario. We're back to rank checking. Yeah. And it's all based on how are you developing the prompt? But then you've got to think like, you know, the millions of people that are asking different ways. it's a lot of shiny objects right now. A ton of shiny objects. Basic, good, well done SEO works. And I'm going to also caveat that with good marketing works. You have to have SEO with good marketing, and that is dependent upon a clear strategy. And most of the businesses that I talk to, I still do some consulting once in a while. I still have some clients. But when I talk to a business and when they are, enthralled by the bright, shiny thing of AI, usually what I find is they don't have a clear strategy. They don't have a clear understanding of what they're trying to accomplish, how they're going to accomplish it, what's going to be the process by which they do this. One company I talked with didn't even have a CRM in place, and they're looking at AI, to generate leads and generate content for their website. And I'm like, you don't have a CRM, you don't have a process, you don't have anything on the back end to take care of what you want to do in the front end. And this, unfortunately, is the type of thinking that makes these things just take off. It's, we saw this with the metaverse. We saw this with NFTs. We saw this with big data. We saw that, let's just keep going down the list. Everyone sees this shiny object and they think it's going to answer all their problems. It's going to save their business. And unfortunately, if you don't have clear strategy that drives your marketing and your marketing decisions, you're going to lose. And unfortunately, the downside of this with AI, I think it's going to take a lot longer to realize the losses, because if you're firing people because AI can write articles, oh boy. It's led to a dramatic increase of slop. Before we had beepers scraping content, reconfiguring it, and it would be gobbledygook, and sometimes it would work. Well, now, the LLM has essentially scraped the content that that it's learned from, and now it's pushing out average content. A site that I looked at the other day that someone asked me to look at, their blog was 90% AI generated pages. And if I consider myself a high level AI user, but I don't think it would take me to figure that out. You just need to look at their pages and you can see it. And the blog doesn't perform well. It's generic. And so AI can't create something new. It can't create, and you can feed it. You can create your own GPT or whatever. Those things help. But from a strategic standpoint, if all you're using it is to pump out volumes of content, great, use it. If you want strategic approach through a system, then you're going to need someone to direct that, especially if you have a purpose for branding, a purpose for reaching your audience and converting them into users, and all the back office things that go with that. You need people to manage that. That is not something a machine can do effectively yet. I think we're in a we're going to see it too soon.
One thing for sure that I know that AI and LLMs can't do is make the types of edits to the site that is going to positively impact conversion rates. As good as, some of these tools might be getting, there are still things that are going to move the needle. What are some of the things that you put into your best practices that are at that endpoint? What are you thinking about? How do you talk to your clients about conversions, about leads, about best practices? Some hands-on tactical examples would be great.
Oh, great. Yeah. And that's where I like to start that conversation from that strategic branding standpoint. I've got 7 questions that I work everyone through, starting with who are you? What's your objective? Let's just start there, because I need to know that. And that is, you as the business or you as the decision maker, those 2 questions are your responsibility. You are telling me who the brand is, what the personality of the brand is, the tone of the brand, and here's your objective. Now I can take that and now I can do the research. Who's the audience? Who are our different audience segments? do I need to modify messaging to those segments? And if so, do I need to reach those audiences differently? So, and that's what I find is, you know, the majority of marketing, or I will say even the SEO industry, when they start talking to someone, they're immediately jumping into tactics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what channel, what social media, how often are we going to post, and when are we going to post, and all that. And they forget to have the conversation at the front end, which is, who are our audiences? What do they need? Where are they? Is our message good enough? Do we differentiate ourselves from the competition? And are we doing a good job in communicating that to them? That's the foundation that we need to work from. And those are some things that LLMs are not great at. So it requires that planning. And how are we going to make this happen? Developing that framework, developing that plan, then moving that out. I worked with Microsoft Worldwide Education for about 5 years, going to different Microsoft offices and working with their marketing teams, their operations teams. And, you know, one of the great examples we had there is when I would ask them, okay, who's your target customer? And we would talk about the small business owner. And so, like, dealing with someone who, you know, we're going to sell them Microsoft Office. We're going to sell them the Office suite. And I would ask them, okay, now, what do they need? And invariably that myopia would take over. Oh, they need a full service suite that integrates all of their content, and, you know, and they're describing Word and Excel and, you know, and in the full service single suite and, you know, stores their information. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. That's not what a small to medium-sized business owner wants. What they want is to make payroll. They want to be more efficient and spend less time at the office. They want their people to be able to accomplish more. And until you change your language to those needs, they're going to dismiss you. Because, and that's a lot of it, is what is the need and how does our product fit that need? Rather than just coming in with the product sledgehammer. No, you need a one size fits all, you know, comprehensive solution. As soon as you hear words like that, and you know, from an SEO perspective, how many times is enterprise solutions overused and it doesn't mean anything? It's a nonsense phrase. So, you know, those are the areas where, you know, I love working with companies in that you have got to change your language. You know, as my grandmother would say, you have got to change your language because it doesn't resonate with your audience. You're not meeting their need. You are hammering your brand attributes, expecting them to see the connection, and they don't.
I've done a number of audits where I copied the text off of their homepage and off a competitor's homepage, or a website from another brand that did something totally different. And I said, which is your copy? Because you excel at customer service, but so does this guy. Mm-hmm. And you do restaurant rebrands, and he is, an industrial carpenter. So mm-hmm. your pretty sounding sales phrases mean jack to readers, to SEOs, and to LLMs. So mm-hmm. One of my interviewees, he said, ChatGPT is your least trained customer service representative. So you need to, for them, for SEO, and for your readers, for your site, take a second cut and look at what you are doing to support your business with the content you develop. Are you, you know, providing the sample shop drawings for your precast walls that your construction teams are going to put in their RFPs to the county? No? Well, they need to do that to get the bid. You're leaving that out. You're going to have them make that up. They're going to go to somebody else that provides that for them. You know, if you're not thinking about the friction down the funnel that's going to prevent the sale, then you're not leveraging your capability to have a website correctly. Because that's what it's really about, in my opinion, is you have a fantastic tool, a portal, an address where people who are clients or potential clients can get information. You know, you don't have to mail them a book. You know, they don't need to be physically speaking to somebody one-on-one. You have an incredible opportunity. And that's why I think the power of digital marketing, you know, budgets are still increasing by billions of dollars every year. You know, a huge part of that will continue to be forever spent on SEO. But, you know, should be considered part of your marketing strategy. How do we use this tool to its best capability?
Absolutely. And that's what I'm seeing with AI. What I would say the overall effect of AI, the positive effect, is from one standpoint, from an SEO standpoint, I am seeing some content be so much better written, so much more in-depth, answering real questions. You know, when I start seeing SEOs publishing like, hey, here's the template that works, I'm like, yeah, that template was, you know, is 20 years old. It's, you know, it's being in-depth. It's the question answer. It's, yes, you're being found for the questions people are asking. And if you haven't been researching what those questions are for the past 20 years, welcome to the party. Because this is what, you know, AI is helping you to do, is understand those questions a little bit more. You know, you say it's like, you know, the least qualified customer service rep. AI is like having 1,000 interns. They could do it speedy, but it still requires someone to knock off the edges, clarify, add some better writing, and get it there. So, yeah, exactly. It's just in some ways, you know, we worked on a site just a couple of months ago, just basically rewriting all of their content because it was so thin. And now we used AI to help, but, you know, 30% of the project is keyword research, and it's not just to find the keywords to rank for. It's what's people asking? How do they formulate their questions? What words do they use in their questions? How do you organize what people want, and how do you translate that into answering their questions? And so then developing that, but also in the tone and the personality of that brand that highlights their distinctive characteristics. And yeah, instead of saying we have great customer service, we're defining what that means. Here is how our customer service works and why people like it, you know, and then list specifics of that because, yeah, like you said, the generalities don't work. And so this gives you the chance to define it. And when you do, it works great in AI and it works great in Google.
Love it. I was kind of wrap up, let people know where they can find you if they want to have a conversation, if there's any resources that you've been building that are helpful for particular people. Go ahead and shout that out and I'll make sure it gets added to the show notes.
Thank you, Jeremy. I appreciate it. You can find me at sitelogic.com. That's S-I-T-E. L-O-G-I-C, SiteLogic. And then also I have a learning site at learn.sitelogic.com. And there I offer online courses in content marketing, SEO, analytics, but also beyond that, how to present analytics, how to do customer research, how to do in-depth keyword research, market research. And these are all coached courses. I'm not looking to get 1,000 people in these courses. I want 5 because I'm going to personally walk you through each course. I'm going to assess you get hands-on assignments. I'm going to give you personal feedback. These are coached courses with real-world activities that are taken from my agency work. And so at the end, you've got a portfolio. You understand what's happening through one-on-one, hands-on coaching as you go through those courses.
Love it. Thanks so much for your time, Matt.
Hey, thank you, Jeremy. I appreciate it.